As part of Ferrari Fridays, William Ross from the Exotic Car Marketplace will be discussing all things Ferrari and interviewing people that live and breathe the Ferrari brand. Topics range from road cars to racing, drivers to owners, as well as auctions, private sales, and trends in the collector market.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Ferrari Marketplace. I'm your host, William Ross. I appreciate you guys listening. Sorry for the delay getting back to you guys. Got sidetracked in the month of March with the death of the family, for a very close family member passed away. So it was unfortunate. I had a few things that I had scheduled and set up, especially in regards to the Women's History Month. So I will still get those out and do those, but I'm going to jump into something else here today on this new episode. And I appreciate you guys listening. So today we're going to speak about some of my favorite Ferraris. I mean, I pretty much love them all. There's maybe one or two that I don't like, but anyways, but these things are fantastic because these are getting back to the roots of Ferrari. This is when Luca di Montezello took over after Enzo's passing and wanted to get back to the roots of Ferrari, you know, getting back to what they were building back, you know, in the 50s, 60s, and kind of maybe in the early 70s. But today we are going to talk about the 550 Maranello and the 575M Maranello. Now, we could also possibly include the 599 in this conversation because that kind of was the last iteration of this kind of car. But in my opinion, in my mind, the 599 was such a huge leap from the 575 to the 599, just aesthetic-wise, technology-wise, motor-wise, everything, that I really don't want to include this in the conversation because it's just such a completely different car. I just don't think it kind of can do justice to this conversation because the 550 and the 575 are not identical, but they are just so closely related that I, you know, this is a conversation that these two deserve on their own, just having these two talk about it. We'll have one down the road in the 599 because that's a fabulous car in itself. So let's jump into it. Ferrari 550 Maranello. That was produced from 1996 to 2002. Now, obviously, with the 550 designation, that we're referring to the engine size. So just a little under 5,500 cc's on that car. So I think it was like 5,478 cc's roughly on that. So hence gives you the name of the 550. So that was getting produced from the F133 engine, which was a normally aspirated dual overhead cam. So 4 valves per cylinder, producing roughly 470-something horsepower, 478, 475, and kind of putting out roughly, you know, not that much less than torque-wise, too. But so this car pulled all through the rev range, which is fabulous, because the one thing about the 550 and 575 is Luca di Montezello wanted to get back to that front-engine V12 Grand Touring Ferrari. Now, at this time, the 456 also came out, but that was a 2+2. So not really kind of falling under the same parameters of these two. But wanting to get back to building front-engine V12 Grand Touring car, kind of back, harkening back to the good old days when Enzo, you know, started the company, was running it. Because if you started looking at production in regards to late 70s going into the 80s, and in the 80s, everything was rear-engined. You know, your F40s, your 328s, 308s, your 512s, 288s, all rear-engine cars. So it got them back to where it was. Another beautiful thing about this, you know, it's a transaxle car. So kind of harkening back to the 275 and 365, having the torque tube and putting the transmission in the back of the car, giving you better weight distribution on this car. Because could you go do a little canyon carving it? Yeah, a little bit, but you're not going to, you know, really tear into it like, say, you're driving a 355 or a 360 or 430 or something like that, you know, going through there in regards to this. Because, you know, it can be a bit, I would say, nose-heavy when you get on the brakes because you got all that weight sitting up front. Now, they did have, you know, a switch on the dash that you could go into sport mode to kind of stiffen up the suspension. You know, that was high-tech back in the day, but the way these were, it just changed up the damping on it. You know, it wasn't like what we have with the magnetical, however you pronounce that word, dampers now. They're basically magnetic and, you know, the flow in there and all that crap and particles, yada, yada. So anyways, you know, this car was made to drive long distance at a very rapid rate. So cruising this thing at a 120 on the highway feels like you're doing 60. So just such a very solid car. Like I said, you know, the design of this motor, you know, you're pulling all the way from the bottom to the top. So if you are like cruising on some backcountry roads that's got some twisties to them, you could just drop this thing into third or fourth gear and leave it there and just go and have some fun and driving this thing, just whipping through the, you know, whipping through the backcountry roads, watching the corn stalks go by. I'm referenced because that's what I have here in the Midwest. So beautiful car, two-seater. And the other thing that is, I guess, very much in demand for this, every 550 built was built with a 6-speed manual transmission. No floppy paddle gearbox. These were all 6-speed manual transmissions. So getting into values on these, they're pretty damn expensive now. Five years, 10 years ago, you could get these things, you know, maybe not 5 years ago, but definitely 8 to 10 years ago, you could get these things around 100, 120 grand all day long, low mileage, you know, great services or everything like that. Now you're easily 200 to 300 grand, you know, depending on mileage, everything like that. You know, you got some, like I said, 300 ones, those are some cheeky dealers out there that are really cranking up. But, you know, hey, they have a low mileage car. They'll just sit on it till someone comes along because someone will buy it, you know, come in or offer them, you know, something close to what they're asking. And hey, they'll walk out the door with it. So, but normal, realistic on these cars, you're about 200 to 230, in my opinion, is where you should be at. Now, could you get something under 200? Yeah, you got to kind of shop around and look, you know, but again, a lot of variables you have when you're looking at a Ferrari and any, you know, high-end car like that in itself is, you know, obviously service history, most recent service, everything like that, because you can find a deal on one. Like I was looking online this morning at 550s and I found a cheap one on there for like 140 grand, I think it was, out of some, you know, some used car dealer in California, but you know, it had, you know, almost 30,000 miles on it. But again, now you start getting a service issue, what's going to have to be done. And you could drive that off the lot and then have to take it to your guy and drop, you know, 30, 40 grand on a service. And that gets you right back where it's up at. So, you know, you got to look at everything on a car, you know, any car you go buy. But to, on these things, you know, you obviously you want to find that book and have, hey, what's the service history? How much paperwork you got with this thing? You know, is it from day one, the whole nine yards? You know, were the caretakers, all the subsequent, you know, previous caretakers, you know, how diligent were they are in regards to documentation? So that's kind of one thing to look at. But again, these things are going up in value like crazy because just because of the 6-speed manual transmission. Now, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you know, people probably dropped in, oh, is this going to be a collector car? Oh, you know, people probably not thinking because, again, you look at the production numbers, they built a little over 3,000 of these cars. So you're like, all right, how could this, you know, be a collector car with over 3,000 of them built? Well, the 6-speed manual transmission. It's that edge. They're not building them anymore. Of course, it'll be interesting to see what's happening because something's telling me, possibly, you're going to see a manual transmission come from the factory, from Ferrari again. Now, will it be in a small numbers, maybe in the Icona series? I don't know. But don't be surprised if you see it happen in the next 5 years. They do something along those lines just to appease their millionaire, billionaire owners, you know, and do it. So it wouldn't be surprising. But anyways, so again, that 6-speed manual transmission is the game changer in regards to this car because it's from the factory. You know, you have the conversions out there. And when we get into 575, you know, when you start looking at production numbers that compared to the F1 transmission, the 6-speed, you know, EAG does a phenomenal job. And the thing is with that F1 transmission, you know, it wasn't built from ground up in regards to, okay, how it works, you know, in subsequent in that transmission. You know, they basically took it where there's a lot of pumps and whatnot that just basically operate the clutch and everything like that, that a clutch pedal would, and doing everything, and the gear change instead of you know, going through the gear selector as just doing everything for you. So with the computer and all that jazz, so doing it is not too difficult. You know, it took EAG some time to perfect it, but they did perfect it and they do a phenomenal job. But I'm getting ahead of myself because that's when we start talking about the 575. But anyways, now the 550. Now there's really only two iterations. Now on the standard 550, you could get the handling package, which, you know, kind of stiffen things up in regards to, you know, your suspension and that. Nothing really in regards to aesthetics, anything along those lines. So that was pretty much it. The only other thing they came out with was the 550 Barchetta, which was 448, roughly, something like that, of the convertible. So with that car, there's obviously body-related enhancements they had to do to make, obviously, stiff, so reduce cowl shake. Now, those cars are actually through the roof, but are very expensive. You know, well, you don't hardly ever see them come up for sale. Obviously, a lot of them are always at auction, or they're going to be off-market sales, but you're easily over $500,000 on those. Again, because, you know, factory six-speed manual convertible from the factory. So, again, it's all about, you know, desirability and, hey, what was produced and, hey, rarity. So those aren't cheap. Again, you don't see many of those pop up. I believe there actually is one on eBay right now that popped up, and they're over $500,000 on it, something like that. But so it'll be interesting to see. I'm still a bit baffled why anyone puts their cars on eBay anymore, especially dealers. But, hey, it is what it is. But anyways, so between the two, and obviously you want to include the handling package, there's only those two iterations of the 550. You know, again, at this time, they weren't getting into – oh, take that back. Now, when this car was built, obviously they have benchmarks that Luca told them they needed to hit. So they did some world speed record stuff down in Columbus, or it said East Liberty, Ohio, which is just east of Columbus. It was the Honda test track, whatever. So they did some world record speed runs. They did, like I said, like a distance of 100 miles covered average speed of 190.2 miles an hour. A distance of 100 kilometers, the average speed of 188, and driving for 1 hour at an average speed of 184 miles per hour. So the one thing, you know, it's, they didn't last long. So I think it was a few months later after that, or maybe even a couple years after that, I don't know, Lamborghini being it. So they didn't hold too long. And again, you know, you're talking a 0 to 60 time of 4.4 seconds. So, you know, this day and age, a Camry can do that. But again, you know, it's not about that. You know, it's not about your 0 to 600. You know, it's just about, you know, it's the experience of sitting in that car, smelling the leather, going through the gear selector, you know, and driving and just, I mean, being in the car. I mean, that's what it's about. You know, it's just really, you know, it just envelops you. It's such a great car. Like I said, you know, I've had the, you know, opportunity to drive both of these cars. And it's some, you know, in the past, and they're phenomenal cars. I mean, absolutely phenomenal cars. It's a great grand touring, I almost want to say daily driver. I mean, hell, look at the guys. Well, I wouldn't say they're doing it, you know, on a regular basis, but the guys at DDE, at Daily Driven Exotics, you know, they picked up a couple of these and they're doing the manual 575s and what was the 599s? Oh, now I can't remember. Anyways, I know they had a 550 at one point, and they sold it, and they did a bunch of stuff to it. I think actually they're doing 599s. But anyways, different story, sidetracked on that. My apologies. You know, brain fart, early onset dementia possibly, who knows. But anyways, back to the 550. These things are just fabulous cars to drive. You know, and what's beautiful about these things too is obviously you're talking a mid-90s car. You know, these cars were only built from 1996 to 2002. So only about a 6-year production run. So do the math, about 500 cars a year. So, you know, they're obviously plentiful, but they're out there, you know. And like I said, at this time, the 456 was also kind of out there as well. But, I mean, there's two totally different animals. You know, interior-wise on these cars, because this is going to get into more talking about the difference between a 550 and a 575. Now, the beautiful thing about the 550, they had the traditional layout, gauge layout. You had your gear, that gear stack with the chrome knob sticking out there between you and the center console. But in that center console, up on the thing on the dash, you had three, you know, large air vents. But above that, you had a gauge cluster that had some of your, like, oil pressures and whatnot. But then right in front of you, you had your big speed dial and you had your big RPM gauge. So everything was right there right front and center for you to follow and do, you know, see what you're doing and keep track of what you're doing and obviously mind your P's and Q's in regards to driving. You know, you say, as I said, is, you know, these cars, but, you know, they live beautifully 80 to 120 miles an hour. And obviously that is breaking the law. I am not saying go out and do that. No, I'm not going to get in trouble for that. But I'm just saying is that's what these things are, man. You pop that thing and it's, you know, fifth, sixth gear and you're just cruising. And that's another nice thing too, is, you know, if you're on the highway to go past, man, you drop that thing down a gear or two, you know, go from sixth to fourth, that rev just, woo, that car, oh man, that thing just sounds beautiful. You know, you get a nice exhaust on that as well. You know, that's the other thing too, is, you know, hey, to all their own, I'm a purist. I'm all for, you know, getting, you know, newer exhaust on a car on one of these, you know, just for sound, but also it breathes it better. You gain a little horsepower and whatnot, but getting anything more crazy than that, putting turbos and all this crap on it, no, that's not me. I don't, I'm going to be 54 this month, so maybe I'm just an old man. But to me, I like purity. But like I said, that V12, that thing just sounds, the songs coming out of that, it's just, it's a symphony. So, but anyways, let's get into the 575, because obviously the 575, you get into it, it's a larger displacement car, hence 575. So what you get into with that is you're talking, you know, just a little under the, you know, 5,700, you know, CCs on the sides. It's 5,748 if you want to be precise. So round that thing up, you got 575. So it gets in there. But the big thing is it also jumps up in horsepower. So you had your roughly 480 was, you know, roughly in your 550. But this, you drive, you know, jump up to 515 horsepower. So you gain a nice amount in the 515. You gain also in torque, you know, getting up there. So, which is nice. So it gets it up there. Not, is it top speed wise? You know, not worried about that. But the big thing about the 575 is that was only built from 2002 to 2006. So it's only 4 years compared to the 6 years for the 550. But the biggest thing on the 575 is the transmission. Now, they only built 2,056 575Ms. Of those, only 246 worldwide, were built with a six-speed manual transmission. Now, obviously, back in that day, everyone was talking, oh, the F1 train, oh, just paddles, blah, blah. You know, everyone wanted the new cool thing. You know, and obviously, you know, if you could, you know, hindsight's 20/20. But, you know, and obviously, you know, you go back, if you go back in time, you'd snatch up all the manual ones you could, you know, because you sit down, I mean, you talk about return on investment. But, you know, everyone wanted a new big thing. But that is the biggest change you're going to have, or biggest difference on these two, is the transmission option. So you go from, little, you know, 2,056 cars, I'm sorry, 3,000, a little over 3,000 cars in the 550, all six-speed manuals, and then you jump into the 575, bigger motor, you know, just a lot of little tweaks here and there. And all of a sudden, you only have 246 worldwide built of the manual transmission on a 575. So, value-wise, you can probably guess, is the manual transmission cars are very, very expensive compared to F1 training cars. They're double, if not triple, depending on mileage and everything, history, options, what have you. They're very, very expensive cars. Like, so you can pick up a 575M with F1 tranny pretty cheaply. When cheaply, that's, you know, kind of take that with a grain of salt. You know, you could be in the low to, you know, low hundreds to mid, you know, 150, 160 range on a 575M with a the F1 transmission. So now getting to what I was kind of talking about before, though, is what's happening with a lot of these cars, because hence such a low production with the factory manual, is a lot of people are doing a six-speed conversion on these cars. You know, we're not talking about the 599, but the 599, just for, you know, production's sake, to kind of tell you, is out of all the 599s built, only 20 ever left the factory with the factory six-speed manual. And those cars are worth close to $1 million, $900,000. If you go online, there's a dealer got one listed right now. I think it's 800, almost 900, just a little under 900 grand. So, rare burgundy. But anyways, back to the 575. EAG is pretty much not the only game, but they are the game in regards to doing conversions on these. I want to say roughly, if you look at it, I think you're probably about 30 to 40 grand on the conversion. That's if you have them do it, but you know, hey, you might as well have them do it. I had heard somewhere though recently there was some financial things or something going on with the AG. I don't know, but like I said, it's all rumors, hearsay. I don't know, but anyways, you know, but you're looking at, you know, 30 to 40 grand to do it. So just let's say, you know, just do the numbers. If you can pick up a nice lower mileage one, that's got great service, you know, documentation, service history, everything on it, you know, recent service and that kind of stuff done. Not saying, you know, you'd have to have a recent service done because EEG can do the service as well. But if you can pick it up, such so as say, for argument's sake, for 130 grand, 100, or let's just round up to $140,000. So you spend, go on the higher end, 40 grand on the conversion. So do the math. You're at $170,000. You're still a lot less than the $300,000 to $400,000 you're going to be in regards to getting a factory manual that these things are asking out there for these. You know, there's, I think there's one on BAT right now that has one as well. So kind of curious to see where that goes. But, you know, they're, because they're a rarity. So, and people sit on, and if you go online, I mean, as sure all of you that are listening, you do too much. You go on BAT 10 times a day and you're looking at other things in between doing actual work. You know, you look at stuff, dealers are getting very cheeky in regards to, you know, on rare cards and whatnot. You know, they'll ask an astronomical number and you just kind of laugh. Oh, they'll never get that. But you know what? At some point, someone's going to just say, well, I guess I got to step up because look, they're not getting any cheaper. That's the thing on a lot of these cards, especially on something like this. They're not going to get any cheaper. Is it an investment? I say yes, it is. They're only going to go up in value, and they're going to get more and more rare in regards to availability. Because as the value goes up, the less and less you're going to see out on the open market. Now, not to say you won't be able to find one off market, but you know, and you got to probably figure a lot of these guys that have these, they get approached constantly if their car's at a show or something like that. You know, hey, give them handle their car. Hey, when you want to sell, give me a call. I'll buy it. You're probably the 20th, 30th person that's probably said that to them. So it's great to have a relationship with some of those guys, but you know, it's just becoming a rare bird, and you know, trying to find these things is getting rare and rare and just getting more and more expensive. So, you know, sadly, I had the opportunity on a 550, you know, some years ago. I should have bought it. I don't know why I didn't. It was around a little over 100 grand. You know, it had, you know, I think it was 16,000 miles on it, everything like that, great service, everything like that. And I just didn't pull the trigger. Why? I don't know. I'm just an idiot. I should have got it because, like I said, these things are great. Now, obviously, let's get into a couple aesthetics difference between the 550 and the 575, because that's the one kind of thing is if someone's walking by and really, you know, everyone's not, it's hard to just tell right off the bat when you glance at it in regards to if it's a 550 or 575. The biggest thing, I guess, kind of dead giveaway, I mean, hood scoop, same location. It's a smidge, I mean, I don't know, maybe millimeter, centimeter bigger. I mean, it's just a smidge bigger, but again, up close looking at it, you're not gonna be able to tell. But the big kind of indicator that can give it away is the headlights. The headlights actually are color matched to the car. If you look at a 550, where the headlights that are itself is actually black. So, but if you look at a 575, they're actually color matched to the car. So that's a little aesthetic change. But then on the front nose, obviously they tweaked it a little bit more in regards to aerodynamics and everything like that to make it, you know, cut through the air a little bit better. But big thing is on a 550, almost look like little fangs. But if you look at the grill and the, you know, lower corners of the grill, whatnot, you'll see fog lamps. The 575 does not have those that are in the grill. So that's a big kind of indicator right there in the front that kind of is the dead giveaway. Because, you know, from the side, it's kind of hard to tell. Now, when you get to the back, a dead giveaway if someone has the 575 M badging on it. Now, again, the 550 never did. I could be wrong on that, but from what I understand, it never did. But the 575, some have them, some don't. So my guess is it's an older thing you could get on there, or maybe someone did it, but not many have it on there. But the biggest dead giveaway on the back, if you're looking at the ass end of a 575 compared to a 550, is right where you reach to lift the trunk up. The 550 has a notch cut out, little indentation for your hand. The 575, it's straight across. That's your dead giveaway right there in regards to between a 550 and 575 from the back. That can tell you if it doesn't have the badging on it. Interior wise, the biggest thing is the gauge cluster and the center console. Now, again, obviously, we have the F1 tranny. It's completely different in regards to the center console because there's no gear selector, gear shift. But is on the center console part, all you have are those three vents that are bigger. The gauge cluster above the vents on the 550 are gone. They're no longer there. They're just, the vents are just there now. Everything moves over to the gauge cluster that's right in front of the driver, and the layout's completely different. Now your tach is basically dead center. That's your big thing taking it up. Speedometer is off to the right. So and all your other ancillary, you know, gauges are kind of encircled around it. So that's kind of the bigger thing. And I guess you're trying to make it more, I don't know, driver oriented in regards to more sportiness, because you're really driving by the revs, not so much by the speedometer. But you know, it still looks beautiful. There's no doubt about that. It's still a gorgeous interior, and obviously if you have that gated manual, it's as pretty as it gets. So it's just little things like that on the interior. And the one big thing is on the 550, on the center console, the ashtray is just kind of black down there, but on the 575, it's a leather. They just went to town more with the leather, more Alcantara on the interior. So they really kind of upped the game in regards to what they did on the interior-wise, and just obviously value-wise and whatnot. So get into it. Now, the one cool thing is they had four different models in regards to the 575 when they came out with. Now, I don't know if, you know, if you want to say the GTC handling package, you know, it changed things up in it. It changed up the suspension. You got Carmex, they got the ceramic brakes on there. You know, obviously that really improves your braking, but you know, I honestly, I'm not a fan, especially in the earlier cars like that. I wouldn't want ceramic brakes, because back then you had to get them heated up before they actually did, you know, worked as good as they're supposed to. And the problem is when they're cold, they make a lot of noise, everything like that. So, but you know, obviously you want to go rarity wise, you want to get that GTC handling package on there. So really didn't change much else. Those are kind of the biggest thing. And it gave you, you know, the bigger 19-inch wheels compared to the 18 inches that are standard. It's kind of got that weird, almost they're two-piece on the car. I don't know if they are two-piece, but they look two-piece. It's got the bolt patterns on and everything like that. But, you know, it's getting different looks. Some like it, some don't. But, you know, it's a different look to it, that's for sure. Now, the big one is, again, going to the convertible, and that would be the Super America. So again, obviously changing up to stiffen things up, everything like that. But what this thing had is they had that electrochromatic roof, glass panel roof on there that, you know, it can, you know, change color, whatnot, everything like that. But I tell you what, that thing breaks, you break and whatnot, forget about it. I want to say, I've heard it's like $100,000, $200,000 to get, you know, get it repaired, get it replaced. It's just obscenely expensive. I mean, it's, again, though, you're getting into rarity of these things. Only 559 of them were built. And 43 of those had a manual gearbox. So you want to talk about big money. I want to say those are probably about $1 million of those 43 is a gated six-speed manual coming out of the factory on the Super America. Gorgeous looking car, top down. I mean, again, you couldn't go wrong. Convertible front engine V12, six-speed manual transmission. Again, though, the problem is, now you're getting to rarity, you know, and, you know, it's, you know, getting to those few people that can afford and buy it, you know, yeah, who wouldn't love to have that, you know, again, you know, I'd love to have a 575 over a 550 just because of all the, you know, a little more horsepower, upgrades and stuff, but there's no way in heck I can afford buying a 575 manual. I mean, I could get a conversion done, you know, that's kind of the argument. It's like, what are you going to do with the car? I mean, you're going to drive it? You're going to, you know, just sit and stare at it? Me, I want to drive it. So it wouldn't be that big of a difference between the 550 and 570. You know, you're not talking a huge horsepower difference, you know, and so it's not really gaining all that much. If I have my druthers, obviously I'm going to buy a 550 because they're more plentiful and I get a little better deal on it. And if I need to, if I'm going to do it, I need to do it here in the next year or two and have some fun with it. You know, I would prefer possibly to buy a 430 manual. Again, probably go with one that's a conversion done on a 430 just because of cost. And again, I'm going to drive my car. And getting into that F1 transmission is, you know, EAG does a phenomenal job. Again, how those things were designed, it's not a big, huge deal to swap in the six-speed and drop in the clutch pedal and do everything. The big thing is the computer and just getting that computer to understand that, hey, it's actually, you're rolling the gears yourself. It's not the computer doing it. So that's a big thing, and that's the thing that took EAG a long time to perfect, is getting that done. Now, there is someone out there, I suppose they did it on a 458. I think they only did one because it was such a nightmare, but that's a whole different story. That's a whole nother podcast. So, but the other one that, there was a custom 575 GTZ that was built by Zagato, that was for a Japanese collector. Yoshiyuki Hayashi did it. So I want to say they only built the one. Oh, I'm sorry, there were six built in total. My apologies. So obviously those custom one-off, and got the only way you're gonna buy one of those is off market, and you got another person, you have a lot of money. So anyways, I've seen them. I don't know, I'm not a fan. I don't like the way they look. Yeah, I know Zagato's a big huge name, but I'm not really a fan of what they used to do with their cars and how they did it. I just thought it was, I wasn't a fan. Just wasn't me. Now, one thing I want to get into about both these cars for your motorsports racing people is, 550, kind of people, some guys, some race teams out there, started getting into it and using that car and build it. But now the big one that did it, and these things are crazy money now, is ProDrive came in, started with the 550, but then they also did a 575 version of it. Built these for the cars for the FIA GT Championship, mainly. Now they built, I can't remember how many they built. I was trying to find out. There's varying numbers, so I'm not going to quote a number. But these things are phenomenal race cars, and these things are big money. And a few of them got, changed hands recently. There was one, I believe, just went through the auction thing, and I want to say it was a couple million bucks. Don't quote me on that. I could be wrong. But these things are great. ProDrive is a phenomenal team. Everyone knows who ProDrive is. They, the 550, I want to say teething and whatnot, get anything going, but man, they had a lot of luck with that 575. I won't say luck, but they really knocked it out of the park with 575 and the racing program that they built with that. So, but anyways, long story short, there's your two differences between a 550 and a 575. Now, like I said, there's not too many differences between the two. Big one, obviously, horsepower, but aesthetic wise, there's not a lot. I hope this kind of can give you a little insight. So next time you're at a show and you see one sitting there, you'll be able to distinguish the two between each other. So you know right off the bat, oh, that's a 550, oh, that's a 575. Like I said, the biggest thing when you look at the front is just look at the headlights. 575, they're color matched to the body, whereas the 550, where the headlights are itself, they're black. So that's going to be your biggest indicator and giveaway. But also the fog lamps on a 550 are there in that grill on a 575, they're not. And again, from the back, just look for that little indentation on the trunk. Okay, that's your biggest indicators. Inside, there's a lot of differences, obviously, with the gauge cluster center console. But as I said, from outside, that'll be able to tell the difference. Again, value-wise, all 550s were six-speed manuals. So you're probably, for a decent one that's got history, everything like that, one that you're going to want to buy because, that way you're not into it, you're going to be close to 200 grand on it. Now, can you find them cheaper? Yeah, like I said, I know there's one going on. I found it on, it was Auto Tempest, did a search. The dealer there had one for like 130, 100, but it had almost 30,000 miles. And God only knows history and everything like that. There's a reason it's cheap. That's one thing you got to remember. It's kind of that edge. If it's too good to be true. So just do your due diligence. Hey, maybe you're handy with the wrench. Because with these cars, you're still on that verge of where you can do a lot of the work yourself. As long as you have a brain on your head and you got patience, you can sort some things out. Same on the 575, same thing. It's still, I'd say basically it's a basic car, but you can still do a lot of stuff yourself. Now, then getting the 575, now we're getting into F1 trannies, and obviously compared to a six-speed manual, hey, with the F1 transmission, mid 150 range, a little bit less on there depending on mileage or that, but your six-speed manuals, you're 300 plus easily. Because I said they only did 246 worldwide six-speed manual. So again, do your thing. Like I said, now look into, hey, if you're considering it, put some serious thought. What do you want to do with this car? I mean, the car's going to hold its value as long as you maintain everything like that. So I mean, if you buy an F1 transmission 575, you maintain it, you drive it, have some fun with it. Hey, you do everything. You might lose a couple bucks. Hey, you might keep your, you might make your money back. Who knows? But you're not gonna, you're still gonna have fun with the car. Or hey, and if you want to drive a lot, you want six-speed manual, get a hold of EAG, get a conversion done. you're still going to be ahead of the game compared to a factory manual, and it's still going to basically have the same feel and stuff like that to how you drive it. Now, some people do say when you drive a factory manual compared to what each has, you know, again, this is if you have that feel, that sense, you can do it. Some people say, oh, you could definitely feel the difference. Some people, you know, it's all about the click, clack, going through the gears. Other people say, I can't tell the difference, you know, but hey, it's so minute. What's the, you know, hey, have fun with the car. You'd be under the in the car under 200 grand. And then kind of, and I don't know if I mentioned much to say, any service and whatnot, EEG, they can fully service the car as well. So while they're doing it, they can go through the whole car well. So just don't be surprised when you send it down there, you walk out of there with the $60,000, $70,000 bill if you're doing the conversion along with the other stuff. So again, it's all about preference. It's all about your drillers. Like you said, I think the 550 is a great value, great, you know, purchase now. It's going to hold its value. It's only going to go up in value. I mean, how fast? I don't know. But I want to say is that 550 is, you know, if you're in the market for a front engine Ferrari, obviously, definitely, I would put some serious thought. I'd buy a 550 just because of the gated manual. Now, going between, say, a 355 or 360 compared to a 550, 57, I mean, it's all about preference, what you're going to do with the car. You know, again, these are front engine V12 Grand Touring cars. They're made to, you'll go drive long distances and whatnot in comfort and have at it. So it's just about personal preference. So go out there and look. But again, hey, guys, I really appreciate you guys listening. I hope I gave you a little insight into these two. Like I said, I got some other ones got all lined up here and scheduled. So we got some more coming here and try and get some more of these out on a weekly basis, guys. Again, appreciate you listening. Check out the Modern Podcasting Network. Motoring Podcast Network, MPN. We're gaining some momentum here in regards to who's on board and that stuff. So we got a lot of cool things coming down the pike. Keep the right side up. Keep the rubber on the road. Thanks, guys. Till next time. Have a good one.
This episode has been brought to you by Grand Touring Motorsports as part of our Motoring Podcast Network. For more episodes like this, tune in each week for more exciting and educational content from organizations like the Exotic Car Marketplace, the Motoring Historian, Brake Fix, and many others. If you'd like to support Grand Touring Motorsports and the Motoring Podcast Network, sign up for one of our many sponsorship tiers at www.patreon.com/GT Motorsports. Please note that the content, opinions, and materials presented and expressed in this episode are those of its creator, and this episode has been published with their consent. If you have any inquiries about this program, please contact the creators of this episode via email or social media, as mentioned in the episode.